Indeed, as always, at this particular time on a Friday, we look back on some of the big stories gone by from this week in the company of our Friday panel. Anthony Gray is the Sligo restaurateur and former president of the Restaurants Association of Ireland, and Joe Shannon is the executive head chef at the Radisson Blue Hotel and Spa in Sligo. Gentlemen, a very good morning to you. Thank you indeed for joining us on the programme this morning. Loads to talk about from the week that's just gone by. And Anthony, I'll start off with yourself, and probably a good point to get us up and running. Mm-hmm. Time and time again, we're hearing about the shortage in staff and how difficult it is to get staff when it comes to tourism and hospitality at the moment. From somebody that's working ahead now at the coalface, how serious of an issue is this, and how damaging could it be maybe for the local tourism and hospitality sector as we enter into the busy tourism season?
Well, I tell you, John, every business out there is in crisis mode now at this stage and trying to get staff. And as regards it being damaging to the tourist industry, I think it's going to be diabolical, because you just can't get staff. And we spoke about this just before we came in, and Joe alluded to something probably that he'll say in a second. But at the end of the day, you can't get chefs, you can't get front of house staff, and thanks be to God, for the first time I'd say in 7 months I got my first CV in the door, and that only happened 2 weeks ago. And because obviously the leaving cert is coming up and colleges are finishing, I'm starting to see a tiny trickle of CVs coming back into the industry. But look, nobody knows the answer to it. It's a lot of people obviously left the industry, and a good few people moved on, but at the end of the day, we need people out there for our tourism, especially our tourism within Sligo, and especially our tourism within the hospitality region. Sligo is one of the biggest hospitality providers in the Northwest. We base our economy on hospitality and the tourist trade. We have a huge tourist trade in Ireland and a massive one in Sligo. So look, I'd certainly say to anybody out there, please, consider it as a career. Mm-hmm. It is a fantastic career, and if at all possible, get them CVs going.
All right. Joe, Anthony has touched on it there, that during COVID, a lot of people would have maybe reassessed where they were in life. Maybe we hear all the time about work-life balance, unsociable hours. There's so many things maybe when it comes to working in the hospitality trade that might maybe encourage people to, look at maybe having a different career path. So what can be done now maybe to try and attract new people into it, or maybe even to get people that have valuable experience to get them back into the fold?
Well, I think there's a number of things there, John. And, I think before we ever had COVID, when it came to chefs, I think it was estimated we were short 5,000 chefs in Ireland before we ever had COVID at all. And that was sort of exasperated then because of COVID, and there was a lot of our non-national colleagues that went back to their own countries and all that. And I think in the general whole of catering during the COVID, some people did find, other career paths, which is understandable. You know, what do we do? I think this problem goes back long before COVID. I think COVID has accelerated the problem. But I think, there has become a sort of dominance in Irish society over the last few years where trades have been forgotten about. Everything has become academic, and I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm just saying that's how it is. I suppose, in our company, what we have started is we started an academy with Ainua Hospitality. And this is where we're going back to the old days. If you remember back with ESB, they used to train apprentices and that type of stuff. In the hotels, there used to be Aer Lingus. Great Southern used to have a similar type of project. And we're no different. So we've started up, we've a chef's academy, which we started up. We just launched it this year, and we have our first 20 students going through. And we started a management academy as well. And basically what happens here is that the company will provide on-site training. We have 14 hotels at the moment. We're hoping to build to 20 hotels by hopefully next year. We will have each hotel will have so many candidates, representing that hotel. The hotel will pay for all college fees. We're doing it in conjunction with Munster University. So there is real, certificates and papers and qualifications from this. And I also think then, there's people like myself, and I'm 40-odd years a chef now at this stage. And when I started in this business, to be honest with you, John, we worked 14, 15, 16 hours a day, okay? we took on the responsibility when somebody didn't show up that you had to work and you felt that, you know, you had to do all of this.
We there was a sense of duty there.
There was, and the trouble is when it comes to someone of my age now in this current era, our thinking was wrong. We thought that that was the right way of doing things because we didn't know any different ourselves. So I'm now actually part of a committee where we're looking at how can we make kitchens a more better and enjoyable place to work in, because they are very enjoyable. If you are creative, you will not be in a better situation than in a kitchen if you have that creativity in you. But, you know, it is a vocation. It is not a sort of a once-off type of job.
It's a creative environment that you're working in, but it's also a highly pressurised one.
It is, but there is other jobs that's highly pressurised as well, and they still get people to work for them. You know what I mean? So you're either, you know, for it or you're with it. But that doesn't mean that you have to work 14 hours a day. That doesn't mean that, God, you're an 18-year-old and you play Gaelic for your local team, and now because you want to become a chef, that you can no longer play Gaelic anymore because you're needed every night to work or you're needed every weekend to work. So we need to think differently on this. And you quite rightly said, and Anthony touched on it, is we need to look, it's not all about money. You know, money is important, but it's about life balance. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? How can we make the life balance? Should we be looking at 4-day working weeks as opposed to 5-day working weeks? Should we be looking at maybe somebody finishing an early shift on you know, prior to their days off? So maybe, you know, once a month someone finishes at 2 o'clock on a Friday, maybe does a breakfast shift, has a Saturday, Sunday off as their days off, and a Monday, Tuesday as their days off, and then comes back on a Wednesday at 3 o'clock, that type of thing, you know. So it's thinking outside the box that we have to do as an industry, because, you know, we were, as an industry, guilty as well. We were guilty of low pay back in the day, of long hours, very little thanks for it, you know, and, you know, we need to change that. And we have changed that mentality. It is a great business to work in at the present moment. Yeah. It really is.
But it needs maybe that the mindset change. And Anthony, if I can come back to you on that as well, because it's interesting, some of the points that Joe made, and I even heard when we look at it, say, from the bar industry as well, and they launched a major scheme this week to train up the next generation of bar managers and the old maybe modus apparatus where somebody would grow up in a family-owned pub and learn the way it was managed like that. They feel that that is now gone, that you need to have these professional qualifications now for the next generation of bar owners. But that aside, the hospitality and maybe the tourism industry, in some ways, there's always a stick there it seems to beat it with. And even as recently as this week, we're looking at the price of hotel rooms, for instance, and those particularly in Dublin, that it seems that almost hotels and the accommodation and tourism industry here are driving people overseas with the prices that they're charging.
I agree to you, certainly to some extent. And look, at the end of the day, you must realise that we had CERT, okay? We had CERT, and when I was president of Restaurants Association of Ireland, I tried to get CERT back up and running. That didn't happen. We now have the MLS ETB. Now, I can tell you, hand on heart, this is one of the finest facilities that we have in Sligo, and they're popping up all over the country. They are going to train hospitality workers, whether it's front of house, bar managers, whatever. And the job they do is phenomenal. I put one lad through it who was with me for 7 years. I have another lad who's with me 9 years and he just started down there. So, like, there is opportunities for that. To go back to the hotel rooms, I believe that we are going back to 2007 prices, right? Or 2007, when the country, not 2007, my apologies, 2017, when the country was known as a rip-off nation. Now, part and parcel, as regards the hospitality industry, we can't do anything about that because it's rising costs. There's rising costs of electricity, rising costs of heat, and, you know, trying to get a chicken now has gone through the roof because the grain came from the Ukraine to feed the chickens. So we're realising all of this, and obviously there was a war.
And supply and demand issue, I presume, as well as hotel rooms, with so many refugees coming into the country now. A lot of hotel rooms have been used for that purpose.
There is only some of them, John. The majority of the good hotels aren't being used for that, okay? Let's call a spade, right?
So that's an excuse that can't be used, you're saying.
I believe they can't use that, right? I have a BMI bonnet. I've had a BMI bonnet for years. I think the hotel industry, right, certain parts of it, especially not down here in the Northwest, we offer value for money. And that is absolutely 100% certain. But if you go to Dublin, right, can somebody answer this question for me today, because I just don't know it. And it bloody maddens me, right? Is when you go to a hotel in Dublin, just because there's a concert, all of a sudden they hike up the price. I can't hike up the price because there's a festival on across the road from me from Alabon. I can't say, well, you know what? I'm going to charge €35 for a chicken breast, but I normally used to charge 20. So, like, you try and get a hotel room in Dublin, mm-hmm. and it's, you know, it's astronomical. You need to nearly take out a loan. And if there's something going on, if there's a Garrett Brooks concert, you could be looking at €1,000 for a room. It's just madness.
It's a very good point that you're making. And Joe, let's bring you back in on this as well. Because even to use as an example now, the Rugby Challenge Cup finals are taking place next year in Dublin. It's estimated that it's going to be worth €15 million to Dublin City. It was just announced yesterday. The finals were due to have taken place in London, but the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium isn't available due to the English soccer season being late in finishing. But already, I'm hearing reports that hotels for that weekend are driving up the prices. Again, they'll say, well, it's supply and demand. But as Anthony has very well described there, if they keep doing this, the goodwill towards hotels is going to evaporate.
And, you know, John, I couldn't disagree with Anthony because he's 100% right. There's no hotelier outside of Dublin that would agree to the scandalous hikes that are happening. And I'm saying that from somebody within the hotel industry. There's always, the world over, there's always off-season and high-season prices, all right? And, you know, I make no apology about that. The reality is, when it comes, and it's the same in the Northwest, when it comes to, you know, wintertime and your rooms are empty, you'll sell them for half the price to have people in your rooms, and that's fine, you know what I mean? And you will get a greater tariff during the summer. Mm-hmm. But when greed takes over, then, you know, that's a different story. And what the message that sends out internationally is absolutely so damaging. Mm. It really is so damaging.
It's basic greed. It's not opportunism. It's basic greed.
It's greed. And the sad part of this is, okay, you would take the government that has reduced the VAT rate, okay, and it's imperative for the likes of businesses in the Northwest and outside of Dublin to survive. You know, at the present minute, they've had a seriously hard time for the last 2 years. Anthony here beside me, two fabulous restaurants in Sligo, having their doors closed for 2 years was just absolutely unbelievable. So things like a VAT rate, you know, a reduction is a massive help to a company like that and to customers. But if Dublin are going to throw it in the government's faces with their crazy price, the government is going to turn around and sort of say, you know, we're going to reverse decisions like this. You know, and this is the reality of what they're doing. You know, I just don't understand. I know I think in 2019 there was 4,000 bedrooms short, a shortage of 4,000 bedrooms in Dublin, they reckoned, you know. Mm-hmm. That still doesn't give an open, you know, permission to charge what you like. You know what I mean? There needs to be some sort of, I don't know, monitoring on this or some sort of repercussions to police this, because it's not fair on the message it sends to the counties outside of Dublin that are struggling, you know, with all sorts of pressures, as Anthony alluded to there. Now, to do business in Ireland is, you know, a lot harder. I sometimes get frustrated when people compare, you know, a holiday in Spain to a holiday in Ireland. You're not putting like for like, you know, and I understand where they're coming from the prices in Dublin, but it's a little bit disingenuous when you take some of the standards of our restaurants and our hotels that we have in this country compared to what over there. You're not putting like for like. And no, I understand you can pay 500 and have a great week in Spain or whatever, and good luck to you. But it's just not a fair comparison, I think, at times.
Yeah,
you know,
there's no doubt about that. And there's some hotels, and, you know, they're doing wonderful deals to get occupancy, to try and get food and beverages and get everything to that across the line. Speaking of catering, and I don't know if any of you are, well, rail users or decides to use the train maybe on a regular basis, but we found out again on this particular programme during the week, Barry Kinney from Éireann Ruair Éireann was on it. Niall, no catering on the Sligo to Dublin train until at least next year. What type of country are we going into now that here we are in 2022 and you can't get a bloody cup of coffee or a cup of tea on a train journey from Sligo to Dublin, albeit let it be overpriced or whatever, you'd still like to have the option to get it.
Absolutely. And look at, you know, if you pay for your ticket and you pay a hefty price for it, you know, that's one of the services that should be provided. Like, it's not rocket science either, you know, to do it. They already have them there. I'd like to know their rationale as to regards why they took it out. I totally agree with you, John. It's, look, to get a cup of coffee on a train, to get a cup of tea, or even a sandwich or a packet of crisps if you have young kids and stuff like that, you know, it's not hard done. And again, look, this is just, I don't know the rationale behind it. I'd love to know the rationale behind it. Maybe, do you know what they should do? Maybe it offers to someone, and you wouldn't be long filling it then if somebody went in there with their own coffee cart, mm-hmm. or supplied coffee on the train. I can guarantee you, you'd have a queue people lining up to get the business. Look, that needs to be sorted. Definitely, I totally agree.
All right, okay.
The problem was that the company that was providing the catering services. Mm-hmm. For their own reasons, says they couldn't afford to provide it. They were having staffing issues, getting staff. Costs have gone up under the terms of their contract. They couldn't provide. Now, what Éireann are saying is, because they're a government body, that they have to go now through a certain procedure in order for people to canvass it, to get the contract. And that's going to take to 2023. I think it's a sad day that you have to wait a year to give a contract to someone to make you a cup of tea. But there you go. Yeah. That's stuck. I'll go out and make a cup of tea for them on the run.
Well, I'm delighted to see, you know, that you're both in great form here, because some of the messages coming in here, some young people don't want to work in restaurants because chefs can be bad-tempered and shout and roar at kitchen staff. So listen to these two guys. They're great fun.
I'd like to address that, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was, without a shadow of a doubt, a culture of that. But
it's all the Gordon Ramsay, isn't it? Come back to him, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think what that man has done for our industry, he has put it back so badly with, you know, he's tamed his image now where he's this caring person. But when he started off, it was F this, F that, all the rest, and blah, blah, blah.
He was a tyrant.
And people found this sexy, you mm-hmm. know, within, which I thought was so bad. I worked in hard kitchens in my day, believe me, I did. And I always swore when I came out of that when I would become head of a kitchen, that I would hate to think that somebody wouldn't come to work because of me.
Yeah.
And I think that is an awful, awful situation, that somebody doesn't want to come to work because of you. And think about that.
Absolutely.
And I think a lot of people need to think of that in every walk of life. I like to think that the kitchen environment that I created in the Radisson, it's been taken over by my second in command, Keith, mm-hmm. Because of my recent illness and that. But it is an atmosphere. Yes, there's tense moments, without a shadow of a doubt. It's like a game of football. There's mm-hmm. moments. But overall, there's comradeship. There's people that get on well together. We have a laugh. We have so many laughs. It's unbelievable. We really, really do. But unfortunately, there is some people out there that think it is okay to treat people in the most disgusting, horrible manner that you could treat anybody. And I, as a chef of 40 years, can tell you I would not... I don't think I would want to talk to somebody that has that attitude. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
None of us are gods.
None of us are. And I think you're so right. That, dare I say it, that kind of building site attitude, you know, the way you treat people, that hopefully is going out of society. And you're right, nobody should be going in worried about being bullied or being intimidated in any working environment.
They can't. And like I understand where people text in, but you have to understand, like, this is going back years and years and years. You could be looking at somebody has an attitude about 40 years ago. That's changed. It went out with the dinosaur. You know, there's contracts, terms and conditions, working conditions. There's bullying harassment procedures. Like, I'm down there 10 years. I'm open in Alabon 10 years. I'm open in Hooked 4. All right? I won't tolerate anyone being nasty to any of my employees. If they're a chef and they start giving out and they start effing and blinding, they won't be long staying with me, all right? Because you can't do that to a young person. And you get a contract, you sign a contract, you get a handbook, everything is in it. So, like, why some people do text in, I have to say that is gone from our industry and it never will return. And that is fact.
Yeah, and I think an awful lot of it, unfortunately, is that Gordon Ramsay image that we just talked about. Now,
as Anthony said, thankfully our HR laws have got better, and they are very much relevant in hotels now. You know what I mean, with HR managers and in restaurants as well. So, you know, anyone that conducts themselves in that sort of aggressive manner has no place in this industry.
Here. And it's good to hear that. And that's an assurance from anybody that's maybe contemplating going working in the hospitality sector. Let's get political for a little while. And during the week, we had the story where the Green Party took the party whip away from two TDs for deciding not to vote with the government in relation to the maternity hospital. And that's been well documented what's going on there. But the angle that we want to take and want to look at this today is maybe the long-term future of the government, because it's very interesting now. They're down to a majority of one. And Joe, I'll start with you on this one. They're down to a majority of one now at the minute. It's way for 10, to say the least. If, say, for instance, and I've been hypothetical here, say you have somebody like Joe McHugh, for instance, in Donegal, who's going to be retiring from politics at the end of the next general election. If he decides, say, for instance, again, that the MICA legislation for the people in Donegal and the Northwest and other counties is not up to scratch, he could decide not to support the government. And that's just one issue. So how secure is this particular government, bearing in mind Leo Varadkar's case with the DPP is on the horizon as well? Can you see it going the full length? And how damaging would a general election be for the country at the minute, in the sense that we're just coming out of COVID at a very important time?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say I have no political allegiance to any party, all right? I think it was Patrick Costello and Nessa Horrigan with the two Green TDs,
yes.
I don't think that's a huge worry for the Green Party or the government at the moment, because I just think that's a little slap on the wrist for them. They're still keeping on their duties on their little committees and stuff like that they do.
Which is completely different, say, for instance, of what Micheál Martin did with Mark McSharry.
Mark McSharry resigned of his own accord. Mm-hmm. He was unhappy with... And as I say, I have no allegiance, but I think taking Mark's history and his family's history, that was a massively brave decision to do on his... And I don't say that with any allegiance, mm-hmm. but knowing the McSharry family and their, you know, allegiance to Fianna Fáil, that was a massive, massive decision, and shows to me what I think was, you know, integrity on his behalf.
A much more significant move than, say, from what the Green Party...
I think what's happened, these two, they're gone for 6 months, they're going to be back, they're going to vote with that government, they really are. If it was anything more serious, you would have found that they would have been taken off any committees that they were and all of that. So it's a little slap in the hand. Now, to answer your question, yes, it's way for thin. I think it's one TD officially, but in reality, I think they have those two TDs on the books. I think they will survive the length. They'll do everything and anything to survive the length, because Leo wants to become Taoiseach a second time, so they will do everything and anything to fulfil that. It's at the next election that's when
it's going to get interesting.
The fun and games are going to start. Well, what place is Sinn Féin going to have after the next election? They are growing, you know, they've used opposition to their favour massively, that their support has grown massively. They seem to have got the grip of the younger voter. Mm-hmm. I think the Greens will be in serious trouble. Smaller parties in coalitions tend to suffer in the next elections.
Could you argue now that the Green Party are almost going to be a lame duck, in the sense that the majority is very thin here, and rurally people have spoken, for instance, Absolutely. About the turf burning issue. Yeah. So as a result of that, if Eamon Ryan decides to go off on another solar run on some issue like this that could be damaging to people living rurally, I'm not sure he's going to get much support from TDs and Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, bearing in mind what the opinion polls are saying.
I don't think they have helped their cause at all as a party, to be honest with you. It's been nothing but negativity towards them, you know. We talk about green issues, and it infuriates me at times, really, because the whole green agenda up to now has been based on individuals. You know, that we have to do this. And individuals have, in fairness, for the most part, have stepped up to the mark. But there's very little on big business, big companies, you know what I mean? There's airplanes in the sky that are throwing out how much, pollution. Mm-hmm. Boats on the sea that throws up how much pollution. I'm not against, I'm just saying...
No, but they're doing more damage than a cow's methane emissions.
You know, what's happening with these, you know? So I think the question needs to be asked of big industry.
It's an interesting point. Anthony, if I can go to you on this, the point has been made that for every day this particular government stays in power, The more damage they're doing to their long-term future, and they're handing more and more votes over to Sinn Féin. And there are those saying here and now it's inevitable Sinn Féin are going to lead the next government here.
I think, it has to be a Sinn Féin government. Do I want that? I'm not 100% sure. But you know, people are sick of this government and you can't blame them. Like, look at the Greens, for instance, right? Coming out with this turf ban. He's coming out one day talking about that we should be growing lettuce on the windowsills in Ireland, right? Then he's telling, that rural communities should be carpooling. How in God's name can you carpool in Ireland on a wintry day? You know, look at the price of fuel. Look at the price of electricity, right? These are all coming. And as Joe rightly said, as far as I'm concerned, the Greens have, you know, shot themselves in the foot. They're going to be decimated. And I do agree, the more that this government goes on, the more damaging it's going to get. And the Sinn Féin have noticed this. They've been very cute. They got a massive majority up the north. Mm-hmm. You know, they are sailing at the moment, and I think they'll fly in.
And just to go back to that point on Leo Varadkar and the file being prepared at the DPP in relation to the leaking of the confidential medical document, well documented at this stage, but how damaging will that be to the current government when it comes to Leo Varadkar going back in as Taoiseach? Are some Fianna Fáil TDs at that stage likely to rebel and say, right, here's our chance, here's the stick to beat the current tarnisher with, and as a result of that they might decide, well, let's pull ranks, let's go for a general election, because we're only delaying the inevitable here?
Yeah, look, you could be right. I don't think Fianna Fáil will do that. I do think that there will be more people, and there's an awful lot of people within the Fianna Fáil party that aren't happy with the current leader Micheál Martin, and obviously we've already alluded to it with Mark McSharry, and you can't blame him. Some of the policies that Micheál Martin have came out with are haywire, but I do think that the Fianna Fáil party is in it's in a dire position at the moment, and I don't think the Fine Gael party is in a great position either. And what are Sinn Féin doing? They're sitting back saying nothing. Hey lads, let you fight away, we'll sit back. And more people now are turning towards Sinn Féin. And you know what? If it's a case that they are offering good alternatives and they are going to do something good, well, I think the people will certainly vote for them, and you can't blame them. We need an alternative government, and maybe it's something that needs to happen. It's a funny one. I don't know. It's a very funny one. Mm. Obviously, we'll have
you
to wait and see.
The winds of change are blowing.
Oh, 100%. They changed a long time ago.
Yeah.
And it's only a matter of time until something gives.
All right. Joe, there's a couple of other aspects and topics that I want to discuss here on the programme as well this morning. One of them is going back to an issue that we had earlier, and it's very much a parochial and a local issue here in Sligo, the future of Strandhill. And I know that Anthony is keen to come in on this as well. Parking. Some people love to go out there. They love to park. They love to be able to watch the waves roll by, as the old saying goes. But yet, change could be on the horizon there as well. Any views on it?
You know, I was listening to your comments as I was coming out in the car today, and there was one great comment. I thought, you know, what happens to somebody that is ill, or somebody, not everybody can walk the distances that, you know, there's a lot of merit. I can understand where the thinking is coming from, because sometimes it can be a little bit bedlam with cars down there. But there, you know, if there is any change, there needs to be, you know, an elderly person, they may not necessarily have an invalid badge on their car, but is it viable for them to have to walk the distance they're asking them to walk?
Well, with no mobility issues, surely not.
There was a fantastic answer to it I heard from somebody, I won't name it, on social media, that says, would they not be better off looking at the dunes as they're eroding at the present minute, invest the money in that at the present minute, because that's far more serious at the minute than the whole parking issue. And if you're talking about the future of Strandhill and all it has to offer, which is a beautiful, beautiful resort.
And that's interesting. That's what the period of consultation will be very interesting to see what comes out of that. Anthony, what's your views on it?
Yeah, look at it. I think this is pure bonkers. I think it's ludicrous. I really do. You know, as Joe said, like, if you have an elderly person, right, they don't want to get out of the car on a wintry day. And let me tell you, we don't have much sunshine all the time. When we do get it, you know, it's fantastic. But you don't want to go out. You want to go out and see the Wild Atlantic Way at its wildest. If you want to get out of your car and go for a walk on a wild day, so be it. If you want to stay in your car, surely to God you should be entitled to that. There is no other other beach in Ireland that has closed off its car park, seafront that has closed off its car park. And, you know, I would highly endorse that on the 27th of May at 11 o'clock that anybody who doesn't want to see this car park closed, and as chairman of Sligo Tourism, I would hope to God that people get out and go and give their opinion. Because we have the most beautiful county in Ireland. Why should we be shutting it down? The other side of the coin here is John, and a lot of people don't know this. The public toilets are now going to be situated in the new SARF Centre, right? That public toilet is positioned about 400 metres away from where you park your car. So what are you meant to do if you're short taken? You know, like, look, they have to look at this with a realistic approach. There has to be a middle ground brought in, right, rather than just saying, no, shut the car park.
And the planning has to be got right now.
It has to be got right. And, you know, we have, as I said to you, you know, the Wild Atlantic Way is on our doorstep. We're a county promoting the Wild Atlantic Way. We need people to come and see the Wild Atlantic Way. Also as well, what about the detrimental effect that it's going to have on businesses? Like, say, for instance, if you want to go for a pint, do you park your car 300 yards up and take an umbrella and chance your arm and dash down the seafront if you want to get into businesses, or if you want to go for a seaweed bath, if you want to go into Shells, etc., etc.? Mm-hmm. Come on, we have to meet somewhere in the middle ground and do it properly, and do not take it away from the elderly people and people who are vulnerable. They want to go out and see the sea. Sometimes you just want to see the sea and dream. Surely to God you should be able to do that.
All right, I'm going to stay with you for a moment, Anthony, because there's another issue, and it's been covered on our news this morning as well, and unfortunately, here in this region, in Sligo in particular, we've had a horrific time in relation to serious crimes that have been well reported and well documented that have taken place. Now, again, I'm paraphrasing the Taoiseach and Leo Varadkar. I remember him speaking in the Dáil, and he said one of the ways is to tackle issues like this is with resources. And he was almost leading us to think that there'd be a lot more guards, maybe guards that would be trained from Templemore, would be coming and would be stationed in the northwest. We're hearing the figures now on the news stories this morning, and it doesn't seem as if we're going to be doing that well when it comes to the deployment of recently trained Gardaí.
Yeah, it's Sligo and Leitrim. Fact, for all the listeners out there, are not getting any new guards for Sligo and Leitrim. Now, how many people and guards have I gone to different parties, and the people know that are listening to this radio station that are retiring? So you have a generation that's retiring and you've no generation coming in. And it is again typical. And how and as you know it, we had a fight to get this new road. Now we've to fight to get guards in Sligo and Leitrim. Like, again, you know, it just doesn't wash with me. I just don't understand it. You know, yet one part of the country will be awash with guards, yet Sligo and the Sligo Leitrim Garda Division don't get any new guards.
That is a very, I suppose, a worrying statistic, Joe, for a lot of people here, bearing in mind what has taken place over the last number of months here in this region. It shows here again that the Northwest is very much, not to the fore when it comes to resources being rolled out. I don't know how to come up with the criteria for it.
I think, first of all, compliments to the present Gardaí that we have, in fairness. They what they do and how they do it, been so under-resourced, to me, is they are just amazing people.
And that's the key, under-resourced. You
know, they really are. And this all goes back, you know, as I say, I'm not political in any manner, but when we went down, when we lost our Celtic Tiger and we had to make changes, they closed Templemore down. Who in their right mind closes down our policing training facilities and puts a ban on recruiting Gardaí and accelerates the retirement of Gardaí, and then wonder, you know, down the road, why do we have a problem? You know, the reality is we do not have enough of people, guards, on the beat. Their presence isn't being seen. There is a fraternity of criminals out there that are taking advantage of this. You know, our road networks, it certainly suits people now. They can get in and out of places really fast and all that. And Rural Ireland is getting the brunt of it. They really are. We had that recent case, and I hope Tom is doing well at the present minute. But it was absolutely disgusting. I know it's an ongoing case. I'm not going to say too much about it. But absolutely, it was just the whole ethos of that type of crime is disgusting. That anybody can go in and do what they to anybody, never mind elderly.
And rural crime is a major issue. And again, that's what we heard when all the Garda stations were being shut down, that we'd have a more visible force on the ground. There'd be more mobile patrols.
John, we don't.
We don't. That's the point
I'm
making.
That's the reality. We don't.
And, it's failed.
And the reason we don't, it has completely failed. It is one. Not 100%, 1,000% failed. You know, there used to be an awful lot to be said, and at times it's only now we realise the importance. Where you had that little station in a little village with the one or two Gardaí, they were like community officers as well as Gardaí. Mm. They served so much. They brought a certain
and community policing was so effective.
Oh my
in
God!
Prevention
it really was.
As well as solving
absolutely.
Crimes.
They knew what they had to look out for, who they had to look out for. And I just think we're missing an awful lot of that. And that is no reflection on the present Gardaí that we have today.
No,
and again,
not.
I just want to compliment them for the work they do under very difficult circumstances.
There, John, as well. Like we were promised a Gardaí station, a new Gardaí station. Mm-hmm. We didn't get it. No. We you know, there's all these recruits coming out from Templemore. We're not getting them. As well as that, you have to remember this. And this is, and I think, look, this is common sense here, right? The amount of guards that are in the force, okay, in Sligo, right, who have massive knowledge. Now, they're retiring. That knowledge is gone. That knowledge is taken off our streets. It's not being replaced. And as Joe rightly said, the Sligo Leitrim Garda Division, I have to commend them for their amazing work. They are under-resourced and it's not right. And by God, you know, we need a political representative to stand up now and say, look, to hell with this. We've had enough of it. We want guards in Sligo. We want new guards in Sligo. We're entitled to them. We didn't get the new Garda station. What are you doing? Cop on.
And they also need to look. To be honest, and I'm going to say it, and people might give off about me, but we need to look at the salaries of Gardaí at the entrance level. Mm. What they're asking them to do at entrance level for Gardaí, it's ridiculous. It really is ridiculous. They have to find accommodation.
Yeah.
You know, the living costs, you take it out of what they earn. There's nothing left for them. They've been supported by their families.
Yeah, and the cost of living when they have to move away, absolutely phenomenal. I want to, if I can, just to touch on one other aspect here, or one other topic before we go briefly. And I know the World Boxing Championships are taking place at the moment. And Lisa O'Rourke, Castlereagh, the county of Roscommon, but Sligo connections.
So happy. Lisa O'Rourke, of course, sister of the fantastic Aoife O'Rourke that took part in the Olympics there. My God, Castlereagh jump up high and I think they're coming home tomorrow. Welcome them in our thousands. Amy Broadhurst as well from Dundalk, fantastic achievement. Two world champions at one tournament is unbelievable. And here's the thing, the possibility now, the reality of we're going to have two sisters from one house representing us at the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is it that? Like, who would have said? You know, if you'd said that 10 years ago, you know, it's unbelievable. And there's a Sligo connection. The O'Rourkes have family out there, the Ransborough Road, and the O'Rourke family. And to them, I just say congratulations. We are so, so, so proud. Lisa, of course, was in her. But Lisa went out with Amy John the last Olympics. She was her sparring partner. And for her to come from that to a world champion, it's unbelievable.
It's fantastic. And Anthony, in many ways here, we're probably seeing the legacy that Katie Taylor, her success in London, is now providing with other female boxers following in her footsteps.
And you know what? Isn't it a fantastic achievement that Katie Taylor has done that for the boxing fraternity? And as well as that, you know, we in Ireland, we produce some amount of unbelievable athletes for such a little small country. And we should be very, very proud of that. And well done, Joan, complimenting them girls. And like, isn't that phenomenal? Two girls from the one house in the Olympics. Sure, you couldn't write it.
But I also think, on the other side of the coin, is the IABA need to get their shop in order. Mm-hmm. It's an absolute disgrace that, you know, Bernard Dunn has another fantastic trainer, has resigned, you know, over internal squabblings that's going on there. They need to get their act together, because here we are, we have these fantastic athletes and they need to be looked after, they need to be financed properly, And, you know, unless the politics of this organisation is sorted out, we could lose an awful lot.
All right. Briefly, you'd be delighted at some of these messages that are coming in, gentlemen. John, will you send those two men up to the Dáil? We might be able to get off our knees again if we have them representing us.
We do a better job than most of them up there.
Any political ambitions, gentlemen? Silence is deafening here.
That maybe first, and
I remember some years ago, I announced my candidacy for the North West elections and the County Council. Uh-huh. And it was on the 1st of April when I announced this. And the feedback was totally amazing at the time. I remember the hotel had to ask Ocean FM to say that it was an April Fool because the lines of the hotel were getting jammed, and it was a very mixed reaction. But I always remember one comment was, there's enough of clowns in there without him going along.
Anthony, would it interest you?
Look, it's obviously something that I certainly do have an interest in it. I have a passion for it. You know, at the moment, I have a very, very young family. And my most important thing is, to be honest with you, is looking after my family. Mm-hmm. You know, if you do go into that, obviously, if I was going to go into it, I'd bloody do it right, and I'd go hell for leather at it. And the other side of the coin is, though, is I have two businesses that are growing. I want to keep my eye on them. I want to keep my finger on the pulse. But it's something that I wouldn't rule out, John. And you know what? Yourself and I will be the first to know when I do intend to go for it.
Well, look, we're looking forward to that. You're leaving the door slightly ajar.
Slightly ajar.
Gentlemen, thank you so much indeed for joining us on the programme this morning. That discussion just flew by. We've got loads of responses. I think we can come back to those messages at a later date. But to Joe and Anthony, thank you so much indeed.
John,
thanks very much indeed for coming in. Likewise. There you go. That's it from this week's edition of North West Today and from the Friday edition. Thanks for listening. Margaret Carr Flynn produced, from myself, John Lynch. We'll talk to you all soon. Bye-bye for now.